Hello and welcome once again to the Many Rules of Film Club. This is Jeff Yance. I am the program director at the Loft Cinema, and I'm joined, as always, by my favorite cinematic cohorts, occasional filmmaker Heather Lattice.
Hi, Jeff.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay Stevenson.
In the immortal words of Jean-Paul Sartre, au revoir, gopher.
Thank you, Carl Spackler. Well, so that gives us a hint of where we're going today. So this is going to be a very, very Murray podcast because we're talking today about one of our great American comedy heroes, Bill Murray.
Yes.
And full disclosure, I just love Bill Murray. I will take him good. I'll take him bad. I'll take whatever he does.
Yeah.
I just think he is the greatest. So I thought maybe we could start by talking a little bit about trying to illuminate the mystery of Bill Murray. About why is Bill Murray so great? Why do we love him so? So what do you two think?
Well, I'll start off with his comedic timing is impeccable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it has been for a long time. Most comedians lose that sense of timing, and he really hasn't. He knows how to deliver that sardonic line. He knew how to do it when he was in his 20s, and he knows how to do it now that he's in his 60s. Mm-hmm. And so we have 40 years of him really being this everyman comedian with impeccable timing.
Yeah, and he managed to run his career so that along the way, things appealed to any different, varied kind of tastes, basically. Mm-hmm. Comedies, dramas, a few oddballs in there, you know, and he's so friendly. So you saw, like, most people's first initial, often at least, depending on your age, is that you knew he was in the SNL and those old school, at
right.
least for me, I knew he was. I didn't watch them, but I knew he was. And then
yeah.
you start seeing him in Caddyshack and those mm-hmm. comedy stripes, those kind of things. And he just is so friendly and funny. I mean, who wouldn't want to get to know him? And then you see him out in public being friendly to fans and that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. You know. And Rusty, you mentioned the everyman quality, and I think to me that's at the root of it. He seems like a regular person, and I think you can project yourself into his shoes thinking, oh, well, if Bill Murray can do that, I could do that.
Absolutely.
Which I think is kind of this, which we can't, but we think we can. I mean, obviously, if we could all be Bill Murray, we would, but I don't think we can. But I think it's that everyman quality that he projects. He looks normal. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a movie star face
not
by
at
a
all.
Long shot. No. And he just seems like a regular guy.
Approachable, which most movie stars are not really approachable.
Right.
Well, and his characters always seem approachable, too. Dr. Venkman, even though he's a doctor.
Right.
A doctor in air quotes.
Yes.
Even though he's a doctor, right, you totally identify with him.
Right.
He's easy to identify with. He's kicked out of the school he's working in. He's got a love interest who's not interested in him.
No.
We've all dealt with that.
Yes.
So there's a lot about his characters that he plays, too. These underdog personas, mm-hmm. right? He's an underdog. Americans love underdogs. Mm-hmm.
We do. Also the sarcasm. I think we can't discount the sarcasm. So here's the thing with Bill Murray. I feel like he would be the guy I would want to sit with at a party where we would just watch everyone else and make fun of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we would bond. I could just feel us bonding in that way.
That's what he does in the movie Tootsie. In
yes.
fact, he's at a party. That's the best scene in
that's
the movie
the best scene in Tootsie
yeah,
exactly.
for him.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah. And that's, to me, sort of the persona of Bill Murray. Average, everyman, friendly, very sarcastic.
Great best friend.
A great best friend.
Yeah. Totally.
You'd want to hang out with him. And then, of course, we can't forget about the non-film life of Bill Murray. The fact that he seems to just have built his career based on the concept of, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, mm-hmm. which is very appealing. Like, he's going to do a Garfield movie. He's going to do Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
He's going to do Meatballs. You can't tell what he's going to do next.
No.
And that's great. And we know that he doesn't have a manager or an agent. Supposedly, you have to call him on his home phone. He has an answering machine. He may call you back. He may not. Which he has said has caused him to lose out on a lot of parts because he just didn't get the phone call, but he doesn't care.
Right.
And I think that to me seems like a very American ideal. Like, oh, I can be famous for doing whatever I want.
Yeah.
And so that feels very appealing, I think.
And he has that talent to back it up too. So it's not just
right.
that and nothing else. It's that and he fulfills. He's good. I mean, he may have one bomb at the box office or one role that's not quite right, but the next one's going to be good. He's right. One of those actors that even if he does bad in one movie, I'm going to still watch him in the next.
We'll always give him another shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something, too, is I think we all agree Bill Murray's a brilliant man. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. He's brilliant. When I watch interviews with him, like on Charlie Rose, he talks at a different level than just your average Joe or anything.
Right.
He's obviously very, very smart. He never seems to be talking down to anyone.
No, that's true.
I mean, he's sarcastic, mm-hmm. but he's not talking down to people. He's brilliant, but he's not acting like a smarty pants.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. I mean, he does mm-hmm. have this sardonic quality, and he is a lot of times, you know, speaking in air quotes, as we've discussed. But even though he's brilliant, he's able to put that aside, and you don't get that sense. You get the sense of everyman from him.
Right. He makes you feel like you're also the smartest person in the room because he doesn't talk down to you.
Yeah.
Which I think is the secret of the comedy. He makes you feel like you get his humor, and it's not pitched above you or below you. It's right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's a very difficult thing to pull off,
yeah.
I think.
And he does it for kids and adults.
Right.
Yeah. Right? When I watched Ghostbusters a kid, he was the reason I loved it. He was a lot of the reason I loved it.
Right.
And all of his crazy lines and stuff. So I liked it as a kid, as somebody in sixth grade.
And you still like it now.
And I still like it now.
And you like it in a different way, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I do. It has changed, but I still love it.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my fondest memory of learning who Bill Murray was watching Meatballs as a kid.
Meatballs.
And it came out before, I watched it as a rerun. One of those, like, I would be at home on the weekend on a Saturday and Sunday, and they would have the afternoon movies. They would play like three in a row, and Meatballs was one of them. And so that was one of the ones I discovered. And there's Bill Murray, and I had seen him like in Caddyshack, but I was a kid and I didn't really get it. But he appealed to me most in Meatballs because he plays one of the camp counselors. And he said during the summer, he's like the entertainment guy. He has fun. They get around the campfire. He instills confidence in the kids to just go for it. And the young loner kid who feels like he's an outsider, who is played by
Chris Makepeace,
who I had the weirdest crush on because he was odd.
He was always the geek.
Yeah, he was the geek. I have a thing for geeks. And there's Bill Murray, like, there with him, helping him learn how to run long distances and pump him up so that he didn't feel alone. And I wanted to go to a camp that was like that. I mean, never got to go to a camp, but I always wanted to go to a camp that was like that. And they all, you know, the scene in the movie when he starts chanting, it just doesn't matter. Like, they think they're going to get beat by the bigger team because they have better athletes playing against the other camp. And it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And it's such a great scene. And it represents, I think, in a way, who Bill Murray is. And I think later on in his career, people thought it was like a phenomenon where he became a serious, quiet actor.
Right.
Like Lost in Translation and that kind of thing. And I really think you can see shades of that in Meatballs, because in the storyline, sure, in the summertime, he's this go-getting, fun guy to be with. A womanizer, if you will, too. But during the rest of the year, he stays alone at the camp and he takes care of the camp and he's kind of a loner and he's quiet. And so he was able to entertain this camp, but also have those quiet moments with the kid to bond with him and make the kid feel like he wasn't alone. And I don't think I don't know how many people watch Meatballs. It's from the 70s, but it's directed by Ivan Reitman, written by Harold Ramis. It's a great movie. I highly recommend it. And I think it does show off that later career quiet Bill Murray that we talk about now. It's there. So his talent was there. I think it was just focused on comedy for a long time.
Yeah. So he wasn't just the wild and crazy guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I, Heather, also loved Meatballs as a kid. I was about the same age as Rudy, the kid in the movie, when I saw it. And that was my fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go to camp and I'm going to meet a camp counselor who's going to take an interest in me and help me be my best person. And
you're going to win that ribbon.
I'm going to win that race. But then I realized when I saw the movie, it just doesn't matter.
Right.
If I win or not.
It doesn't matter.
As long as I play the game.
Yeah. As long as you go for it, no matter what.
Which was a very kind of a non-Hollywood message for a movie that was about a competition.
Right.
Because usually, you know, winning is everything.
Winning American.
And that's a very American ideal.
And it was very kind of anti Yeah, anti-capitalist, anti-American kind of deal.
Yeah.
It was also probably why I liked it.
Yeah.
Well, they were battling the rich kids. Yeah. The other camp had more money and more facilities.
Yeah. The snobs versus the slobs.
That's true. And there was, you know, the, Bill Murray plays this practical joke on the camp director every year, and he leaves them on the bed on the, in the middle of the lake. It's hilarious. But so, yeah, that's a good point. It was battling against the richer camp with the richer kids. And these were the kids that were kind of like middle America or lower and that kind of thing.
That's the underdog again.
Yeah. He was the ultimate underdog.
Well, yeah. And the kid was, Rudy was an underdog. He was the awkward teen that, you know, you wanted to help. And Bill Murray did. And it was, it's true. It's a very good observation.
Yeah. And every summer I sing to myself, "Are You Ready for the Summer?" The theme song for Meatballs when it starts getting 110 degrees
I
here.
I love that song too.
Oh, just watch Meatballs.
Yeah.
That's all I can say
so
about that.
It's underrated Bill Murray moments. I think that people should revisit.
And that's his first movie where he was the star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he had a real run there. Like, he was the biggest name in comedy. So he had Meatballs, Caddyshack, Carl Spackler.
Stripes.
Stripes, though it doesn't deserve its acclaim that it gets a lot of times, I would
argue. No, there's a whole theory about Stripes that you can love the first half of it and then be completely bored and lost in the second half.
I don't even watch the second half.
I tried it again recently, and it holds true. I can't tell you what happens in the second half. I don't know what happens. There's tanks, and they're crossing a border, and there's some sort of political intrigue. But where's the funny Bill Murray comedy? It was at the beginning.
Yeah.
Now it's not there.
I rarely wear underwear. Yeah. And usually when I do, it's unusual.
Right.
Right? That's good stuff.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to see.
The boom chucka lucka lucka boom chucka.
Yeah.
Yeah. None of that at the second half of the
film. Our sergeants are big toe.
Right. And yet, it was a big film. Like, people went to see it. It was very popular.
Sure.
And then leading into Ghostbusters in 84. So he was the mainstream comedy actor at that time, I think.
Yeah. Chevy Chase was kind of giving him a run for his money.
But he couldn't.
He couldn't keep pace at that point, no.
No, he lost his timing.
He lost it. He lost
his sense of timing.
Fletch lost his timing.
Fletch.
Fletch, too, lost his timing.
Oh, yeah.
Fletch has its fans.
Yeah.
Fletch, too.
I like Fletch.
I like Fletch, not Fletch, too.
No, not a Fletch, too. No. Yeah, so then it's always interesting to me that Bill Murray was so popular when he is so odd, yet somehow he found a way to make America love him.
Yeah.
Which was great, because he's a weird kind of comedy.
He's oddly compelling. Like, you're attracted to his personality, but he's not like, you wouldn't, if you didn't know him, you wouldn't stand out in a crowd.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm. No, that's right. He's not particularly handsome.
It's not like crazy looking like John Belushi. Like, John Belushi looked funny.
Yeah.
Like, you just saw him.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy's going to be funny.
His physique. And,
Right.
And Bill Murray's hairline has something to do with it, I would argue. He's always had the same hairline.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's not particularly on most people. They don't handle that hairline that well. He really did. And continues to. The hairline stayed pretty much the same all his whole career.
Secretly, we did not know that it has been a toupee since 1989.
Very bizarre toupee. Just got to keep it up, I guess.
Yeah. And I think he really defined that persona in Saturday Night Live, the Nick the Lounge Singer character, which we were talking about earlier, singing the theme from Star Wars. You know, Star Wars, crazy Star Wars. That kind of like fake smarmy act that Bill Murray does so well. I think he nailed that right off the bat. And that's
absolutely
that still pops up, you know, today. Like, he hasn't lost that, which is great. And then his appearances on Letterman were sort of an extension
true.
Of his acting style.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he was huge on Letterman. That was Letterman's first guest was Bill Murray.
And his last
guest. And so
that was so good. But
I love, go and find it on YouTube, the last episode, or the episode where Bill Murray appears, the last episode. And it's great because they look back on his career with Letterman, and it's hilarious. It's so funny.
Right.
And the smarminess, too, on Saturday Night Live, I just watched a skit where he played Richard Dawson, the host of Family Feud. It was Conehead Family Feud. It's an amazing array of talent on that stage. And here's Bill Murray acting like he's Richard Dawson, giving weird kisses and acting all smarmy, and it's brilliant. It's really funny. It's got its quirky moments and odd too, but it's just really great and funny stuff.
Yeah. So he's someone who obviously admires and is also kind of horrified by showbiz.
Yes.
And he makes fun of it,
but
it's affectionate. And then, of course, as he moved on through the 80s, we got to the era of Groundhog Day, where he started doing more kind of
classic
romantic comedies almost.
But with a twist.
With a twist.
With his, like, sarcastic tone and humor. Yeah.
Groundhog Day is one of the scripts he thinks is one of the best he's ever seen.
It's a great script.
Mm-hmm. In an interview with Charlie Rose after Rushmore, he's like, Rushmore, Groundhog Day, and Mad Dog and Glory are the three best scripts I've seen. I think he's since changed that and really loves Lost in Translation and Broken Flowers. Mm-hmm. But those three movies are kind of interesting. Groundhog Day is a perfect film in a lot of ways.
Agreed.
Yes. Yeah. And it would not have been the same had it been cast with another actor.
Oh, no, yeah.
I mean, because he brings that Murray edge to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that he had an artistic slant in the 80s wanting to do The Razor's Edge, which he did the Somerset Maugham adaptation, which was kind of a bomb.
Yeah, it didn't get the acclaim. It kind of made him sad from what I hear, because he put a lot of his own money, and he really worked to get that made.
Right. And people didn't respond, because it wasn't Bill Murray that we loved. Yeah.
And so they weren't ready.
They weren't ready for it.
Mm-hmm. No, and it's not great. It's good. It's watchable, but it's not a great film. I think he really thought this is going to be an Oscar performance.
Yes.
I think he really thought that. It's a remake of an earlier film with the same title.
Yeah.
About a World War I vet coming home. It's really poignant, and there are moments it's great. He's not particularly great in it. It's not his typical thing. After Ghostbusters and 1984, he took some time off. He went to France, learned French there, or worked on his French.
Grew his craft. Yes. Yeah, and then kind of came back in the late 80s for Ghostbusters 2.
Which is solid.
I can't totally agree.
I love Ghostbusters 2.
I know you love Ghostbusters 2, yes.
Why would you not like Ghostbusters?
I do not like it at all.
Really.
Oh my God. I did not know this was going on.
I want to.
This is madness.
I still want to. I do.
Oh my God.
No, I'm with you. I loved Ghostbusters a ton. We've discussed this in like Film Club Origins. I went and saw it a bunch of times at the theater. So when Ghostbusters 2 was coming out, I was really excited. I made plans to see it twice before it came out. Just when I heard it was released, I had friends. I'm like, okay, I'm going with you to see it first, and then I'm going with you to see it. We're going to go see Ghostbusters 2. It's going to be great. Bill Murray's going to be great. He hated being in it, right? Like,
he didn't want to do it.
No.
And he didn't like it.
And I think that comes through sometimes.
I don't care. I still like it.
He doesn't even care.
I will still watch that movie over and over again.
And the green slime.
Yes. The sewers. Yeah.
Viggo.
Yeah.
I love Viggo the Carpathian. Like, that is a villain.
Wow.
And he plays that character so crazy and funny. And like, I don't know how you don't like Ghostbusters 2, but that's okay. I love Ghostbusters.
You're a rebel. That's great.
Ghostbusters 2 is a classic.
Okay.
Classic. I wonder why that didn't come up in our sequels, because neither one of you
like it.
That's
right. Yeah, I know.
It's true.
I would like to like it, but I can't. But there's a lot of other Murray movies we like. And so then he's moved into the 90s, Groundhog Day we talked about. Started doing a lot of like smaller roles in like Little Shop of Horrors and Ed Wood, which he's great in, little cameo. And then one of his big movies, which I think is kind of underrated, is What About Bob, which came out in the early 90s.
Yeah, it came out, let's see.
Is it 91, maybe?
Yeah, 1991. I remember I went and saw it in the theater. I remember I was in Indianapolis at the time, which we were visiting the town from my hometown, and my girlfriend and I went to see it, and I loved it. I went back and watched it. It's got the first 15 minutes of it, it starts to fall into the kind of 1980s comedy tropes that are not good, honestly. Without Bill Murray in it and being as great as he is, and I think Frank Oz as the director also really helped to make it, but without Bill Murray, the movie just isn't memorable at all. And instead, it's a tour de force for Bill Murray. He's unstable. He's mentally unstable. Maybe some of it's psychosomatic, maybe some of it's real. We don't really find out necessarily. He becomes pretty normal by the end, and everybody likes him. But his doctor, played by Richard Dreyfuss, Dr. Leo Marvin, he drives crazy. And it's really hilarious. Frank Oz gets so much performance just out of facial features from both Bill Murray as Bob Wiley and Richard Dreyfuss. And Julie Haggerty's in it too.
Oh, she's great.
She's really great, and her face is really funny.
The kid is really great.
Oh yeah, Sigmund.
Yeah, he's great.
And so there's a ton about it that's really good. Bill Murray carries it, though. His annoying presence is hilarious. I watched it again, and my wife and I were still just laughing and laughing at it.
Yes.
And after the first 15 minutes of rewatching it, I was like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be as good as I remember. But it is. Mm-hmm. It really holds up over the long run. And you completely forget about the fact that it looked like it was going to be a typical 80s sitcom.
Yeah.
Even though it's from 91.
And it treads into dangerous territory because it's a comedy about mental illness. So that could go horribly wrong, of course. But Frank Oz often does dark-themed comedies that really work.
Yeah.
And because Murray's so likable, it pulls you through.
Yeah, it really does. And I guess Richard Dreyfuss didn't like him on set. They kind of famously didn't get along.
Right.
But they play that up, and you can tell it really makes both performances great.
It's very antagonistic, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can see that Bill Murray's poking him, like, throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Like, you can see it's more than just an act a little bit. There's more to it, and it makes the performances great.
Yeah.
Very entertaining stuff. And again, I'm a fan of Frank Oz's direction. Mm. He seems to make some really great movies. We've talked about Bowfinger before that I like from 1999. Mm. And he also did In-N-Out and quite a few other great films.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah,
Dirty
Bill Murray's in that too.
Yeah.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, yeah.
And as a callback to Meatballs, Bill Murray helps the kid learn how to dive.
Yes. That part's
That's
amazing.
His thing. Yeah. He helps us.
Yeah.
He helps us be better people.
Yeah. He may make you laugh or make you angry or frustrated, but he helps you.
Well, and that's the one thing I would say is I can kind of see if I were a director, if I were somebody who was having to work with Bill Murray on a set, looking at all that stuff he did on Letterman, you could see how it could get maybe frustrating dealing with somebody who's a little bit manic and a little bit crazy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there have been many, many stories about him not getting along with his fellow actors, producers.
Yeah.
Supposedly Sean Young, he hated on Stripes, but a lot of people had a problem with Sean Young, apparently.
Yeah, she has a history of having issues with people.
But the producer of What About Bob apparently has, which I've read her account of this, that Bill Murray threw her into the lake.
Oh, my God.
Because he was so upset about something that was going on.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
Well, and you had a Bill Murray month at the Loft, right?
We did. And What About Bob was the surprise hit, like after Ghostbusters, which is always going to be the biggest film. It was What About Bob was the biggest draw.
Yeah.
And I always think of that as an underrated film, but I think people really love it.
No, people, I know I have friends who are diehard What About Bob.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that because I always think that Groundhog Day overshadows it.
Oh, right.
Really?
That's how
sometimes I can see that, yeah.
I think it's a better overall film. Groundhog Day.
I laugh more in What About Bob, though.
Yeah.
No, that's true. So, there's truth to that.
If
it's a bigger comedy.
Yeah.
It's a bigger comedy,
yeah,
for sure.
If you
want
to laugh and see Richard Dreyfuss fall apart.
Freaking lose it.
I am amused by. Because Richard Dreyfuss kind of deserves it to a certain degree.
Yeah, he deserves it,
Then What About Bob's your movie.
But I think Bill Murray unshackled from having to portray a romantic leading man.
Yes, that's true.
Makes him funnier, Bill Murray.
Yes.
Because in Groundhog Day, he still had to be somewhat romantic and likable.
For Andy McDowell.
Yeah, he couldn't be totally insane. But What About Bob?
Thank God for him, because she sucks. I mean, she's just not.
Yeah.
She's probably been in like two movies that were good.
Wow.
Like
okay.
That she did well in. I mean, they had to dub her voice in
Greystoke, Legend of
Tarzan. Because she was so bad. And I mean, Sex, Lies, and Videotape is good, but the weakest link is her. So...
Okay.
But anyways, I digress.
Well, thank goodness she was not in Ghostbusters 2, because then you would have had a real conflict.
Right,
I love
right.
it. With...
Yeah, but it was still good.
Andy McDowell, yeah. Yeah, so then as Murray moved on through the 90s, a little rockier, he had a directorial debut with Quick Change, which was so-so.
It's uneven at best.
It's uneven. Yeah, he hasn't directed another film. I thought he would maybe give it another shot, but he hasn't.
Yeah, I kind of expected that too.
Yeah.
Gina Davis is in Quick Change. Randy Quaid.
Uh-huh.
Jason Robards.
They're, great cast.
It's a really good cast, and it's got moments that work, but overall it just kind of falls flat, and I never really... I can't say it's a film I love. That's one of the movies that I went to the theater and I was alone watching that one.
Oh, wow.
Just where there was nobody else. It was me and my girlfriend, and nobody else was in seeing Quick Change that time.
Well, then in 98, a film that I love, Murray sort of reemerged because he kind of was in the wilderness a little bit in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then in 1998, he did Rushmore, the Wes Anderson film, which is sort of credited with being the film that I think gave him clout as a respected thespian in independent films. But as we talked about, he always had that in him, but he was just being used in big Hollywood comedies. But in Rushmore, I think Wes Anderson really plays up the loneliness in Bill Murray that we saw hints of in earlier films, but really sort of drew that out. And that makes a great comedic performance because he's also sad. So you get humor and tragedy in one character, which is great. And he plays both beautifully. If you haven't seen Rushmore, it's just about Bill Murray is a rich industrialist named Mr. Bloom, who develops this very interesting friendship with a 15-year-old kid named Max, who's going to Rushmore High, a private school. They both fall in love with the same woman. Mutual revenge is enacted by each of them.
Hilariously.
Mm-hmm. Kind of hilarious, yeah. It's a comedy, but a sad comedy. And it mostly turns out well.
Mostly.
But Bill Murray is great. There's a scene in Rushmore where he strips down to a bathing suit. So he's got the funny body. He's playing up comedy because he's got the pot belly. And
he's smoking and drinking.
He's smoking and drinking while he's in the pool, while he's getting on the diving board. And then he jumps in the pool and the camera goes under the water with him. And you're laughing. And then the scene goes on and he doesn't want to come up for air. And it just sits on him contemplating underwater, should I even bother living? Mm. Which perfectly encapsulates that movie because it becomes sad and melancholy, like in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And he pulls it off, and it's great. And he got a lot of awards for that performance, a lot of nominations for awards, and won a lot of awards.
Well, and launched Wes Anderson's career, right?
It launched Wes Anderson, yes, and launched Jason Schwartzman, who plays Max Fisher in the film.
Yeah.
And really kind of relaunched Bill Murray. So it's a really pivotal movie for all of them. And I also love Wes Anderson, and this is really, I think, the first quote-unquote true Wes Anderson film. He did Bottle Rocket before, which was not really Wes Anderson-esque to me. But this movie has all the interesting color palette, the very symmetrical shot composition, quirky characters, the great British rock music, which he uses a lot.
Really great soundtrack. Also, it's got like the father issues, right?
A lot of daddy issues.
Yeah, yes, and that always comes up. Getting recognition from your father, your father not being so aloof, but being involved in your life, hopefully, but maybe not quite finding that.
Lonely Children, which we saw in Moonrise Kingdom, and it just through all the Wes Anderson films. Mm-hmm. Another callback to Meatballs, of course, is that this is sort of a parallel relationship between Bill Murray and a young kid who he's helping to mentor, which is an interesting theme that has emerged in Bill Murray's career, I think.
Yeah.
He has a lot of kids in real life. I think he has 6 or 7 children.
Holy crap, I didn't
know
that.
Yeah.
So I think he likes kids.
Yeah.
And you see that in the movies. And in Rushmore, I think he really plays up the kind of ambivalence about parenthood. Because he likes Max, the kid, but he drives him crazy too. And then they start competing for a woman, which is a really uncomfortable position to be in with a teenager. As a 50-year-old man.
Yeah.
When he doesn't like his own kids in the movie.
That's right. He wants a kid that he likes, and he doesn't like his kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he likes Max because Max is kind of a quirky go-getter who's into a lot of different things.
A million different things. Calligraphy club, fencing club.
Yes, that's right. Like literally a million things. Yeah. And then Bill Murray has gone on to be in pretty much every Wes Anderson film since Rushmore in some capacity.
So. Yeah.
As a voice in Fantastic Mr. Fox and Royal Tenenbaums and... One of my favorites, The Life Aquatic, with Steve Zissou. Well, it's Bill Murray in a spandex bodysuit.
Yeah.
And, you know, underwater.
What more could you ask for?
And he's going to be in the new Wes Anderson, The Isle of Dogs, which is another animated film. He's going to do a voice for that. And so that's something else we should talk about is Bill Murray's voice.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yes, because he's in The Jungle Book.
That's one I just watched again this morning. I finished it up again. I love the 2016 movie, The Jungle Book. Academy Award winner.
Academy Award winner.
Not Bill Murray there, but the film won for best special effects.
Yeah.
And it's just really beautiful. And this is an example where I really love that a live action was made from the animated film. Mowgli is really a little boy in this, where in the Jungle Book, the cartoon, you don't see him get dirty. You don't see him. He's skinny and everything, but in this one, he gets the scratches. He's got matted hair, And his buddy is Baloo the Bear, voiced by Bill Murray, which is a brilliant casting choice.
Yes, it was inevitable.
I tend to think so. Yes, it's the Baloo the Bear we've all wanted.
That's right.
And there's so much I love about the movie, but yeah, I just really particularly love Bill Murray's performance in it. And the movie itself is just, it's gorgeous to look at. It's really sweet and sad at the same time. The Baloo the Bear character is a perfect Bill Murray character, a ne'er-do-well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like Bill Murray himself.
That's true.
Yeah, who's still funny and...
Who's mentoring a kid,
exactly.
What is it with his theme? See?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone needs to ask him that, and if he's noticed that.
That's right,
in an
interview.
And I haven't seen Garfield, or Garfield 2.
A Tale of Two Kitties. You haven't seen that? Speaking of great sequels, which we talked about recently. So he voiced Garfield, mm-hmm. and I can't really support...
It's a good match.
Yeah, it's a good match. I can't really love those movies, but I think he was very appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up as a kid as loving Garfield cartoons and the comic strip and stuff. And granted, the movies are not great, but when I heard his voice matching Garfield, I like blew my mind. I was like, that's perfect.
And
like,
I don't buy for a second his story that he thought it was a Coen Brothers film, so that's why he was doing it.
Money, money, money.
Take the money, Bill.
Which
that's
fine.
We don't care.
I still respect him.
That's fine. Because during the same time, he was also doing movies like Lost in Translation, which he got the Oscar nomination for, the Sofia Coppola, and a film I know you're very fond of, Heather, Broken Flowers, the Jim Jarmusch film.
Yeah, it's amazing. Jim Jarmusch, I mean, it's a definite Jim Jarmusch film. It's not one of the ones that TV hates from his norm. But he plays an older gentleman who's retired, basically, and he had a good career. It seems like he has money to do and lived a life of success in his career, and now he receives the opening scene is his girlfriend leaving him. And
played by Julie Delpy.
Delpy, who is a short role, but very good. And she's leaving him like all the rest of his women have left him, because essentially you get the vibe that he doesn't leave women, but they leave him. And so she leaves, and he gets this letter saying, you know, you and I had a romance 19, 20 years ago, and as a result, we had a child, you have a son, blah, blah, blah. The son may be coming to look for you. And through all of this, it's very calm. There's no, like, he's very quiet. You would think that, you know, an average person getting a letter saying they have a child potentially might raise some emotion. But this role, it's very low-key, one of his lower he's comedic in it, but it's a very quiet, sarcastic comedy.
He's almost purposefully divorced from emotion.
Yes. He's very, lives a lot. You could tell that she's also leaving Julie Delpy's character, her name's Sherry, I think, leaving him because he's not connecting with anything.
Mm, that's right.
You know, he sits in front of his TV. There's these great shots of him in this huge living room, dated living room, but kind of 70s, 80s-ish, and watching TV, and there's no emotion from him. He's just kind of living, like nothing.
Which is very Jarmusch.
Right, very Jarmusch. And so he has a neighbor who's Winston, who's played by Jeffrey Wright, who's great, and he's like obviously one of his only friends. And, you know, Jeffrey Wright's character lives in a house with his wife and his five kids, so that's the complete opposite of what Bill Murray's life is. And he suggests that Bill Murray go on a journey to find who are the women in your life around that time. Let's find them and see who is the woman that wrote this letter to you. And so he's kind of like, there's hints that Jeffrey Wright's character, Winston, wants to be a writer. So you're like, he's kind of trying to find a mystery in someone else's life because he doesn't have it in his own, because he just goes home to his wife and have five kids. Mm-hmm. And so basically Bill Murray says, all right, I'll do it, but you plan it and I'll pay for it. And so they go about this journey, and he starts off, and essentially they find out that there's four women left out of the five that could potentially be the mother of his child if this is true. And they find out the first one is passed away, which is kind of a sad moment. Mm-hmm. And then, because at no point does he ever talk about, oh, I always wondered about them. The only reason why he's thinking about them is because this letter came to him.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's no, like, again, no emotion, yet there is emotion. Like, there's this overarching sense of solitude with him, and he's okay with it. But the fact that Sherry just left him means Maybe.
Yeah.
You need to reevaluate. And so this journey helps him do that. And so, you know, various parts during the movie, let's see, the first one is she was in 6 feet under. The redheaded mother.
Oh, Frances.
Frances Conroy.
Yes.
Sorry. Yes. Frances Conroy is the first woman I think she's the first woman.
I think so.
And, you know, and it goes on. And every woman I was wrong. Sharon Stone is the first woman he visits.
Uh-huh.
And every woman he visits, he brings these pink flowers to. Sharon Stone is kind of like, you know, a heartbroken widower because her husband was killed. And they have a moment where... that's the only one he ends up spending the night with. It was a weird like feeling of, that seems like it would make sense. Like, I think humans tend to have a fantasy of what it would be to be again with someone, an old love,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they romanticize it, but it turns out to be not good.
No.
And like not, she's not like in a great place in her life.
Well, Sharon Stone, what do you expect?
Right. Right.
You get an ice pick in the head.
Yes. He kind of wakes up and realizes like she's laying on top of him. And she even says, oh, what are you doing here, Donnie? And like, and that's the other thing. His name is Don Johnston. Mm-hmm. And whenever he says, I'm Don Johnston. And they say, ha ha ha, Don Johnson. And he's like, no, Johnston with the T. And so it's an ongoing thing. And
also a reference to Don Juan.
Yes.
I imagine.
Don Juan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's at the beginning of the movie as well. Very Jarmusch-y. Like there's a clip of a Don Juan movie. I mean, how more Jarmusch can you get?
Right.
But yeah. So he goes through. He sees Sharon Stone, Frances Conroy. Jessica Lange is the third one, who is great too. She's an animal communicator, which is a great scene. And it's all of that. It's very Jarmusch-y in that they don't say everything, but it's there.
Right,
it's very
right.
emotional, and you could tell it's what you would think would happen. It's not going to be happy all the time when you want to go revisit someone you loved before. You know, there's a reason why they left him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all these women left him, and there's a reason. And the very last one, of course, is you only see her briefly, but it's Tilda Swinton, and his build up to see Tilda Swinton,
not going to go well.
It's not going to go well.
And you just know it's not going to go well. So in the end, you know, he goes on this journey and he ends up with like a black eye and he wakes up in the middle of a cornfield. And after he visited Tilda Swinton, and he gets no answers from any of the four women as to is this who did you have a child that was mine?
You can kind of infer that a couple of them didn't.
Right.
Right.
And you can infer that Tilda Swinton may be the closest one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because a few of the matching clues and stuff like that.
But it remains ambiguous, like all Jarmusch movies pretty much are driven by ambiguity.
Did he even have a son in the first place?
Right.
And did Sherry write the letter to get him going? Because he comes home after the journey and he sees a letter that's written in pink stationery, like the other one, looks similar. And it's Sherry saying that she's still... cares about him, still likes him, and assuming you it's in implications that she'll come back to him eventually.
Right.
He runs into a young boy. Maybe the boy is his son, but I don't think it is his son. He's just projecting because he now that he's been on this journey, I think he's seeking that now, like a kid to mentor.
Another
ding
ding. I
just clicked that in right now.
Yep.
And so the kid he kind of freaks the kid out because he says, I know you think you're my son. And it kind of freaks the kid out. So you never really know. Was the kid his? You see another kid. And you don't get any answers. So if you want to watch Broken Flowers for answers, you're not going to get it.
No.
You're just going to get the very quirky, interesting relationship interactions he has with people he used to love.
Yeah.
And this solitudeness that is very Bill Murray. I think people want to say, it's such a new wave of his career. But he's been playing that solitude in that quiet character a long time. You just didn't see it as much as you do now in the roles that he picks now. And Jarmusch is great at projecting solitude and loneliness.
Oh, it's easier to do with an older gentleman as opposed to a young man, too.
Yes. And he's got that face, the hangdog face.
Yeah.
But it's the funny, sad Murray that I think is now sort of locked in as his persona, which was on Lost in Translation. I think Sofia Coppola really exploited that.
Yeah.
And if you really want to stretch it, that's another adult
Yes.
Child mentorship situation.
True. I mean, because
it's honestly, not a romance.
I never, like, I really was annoyed at the time when people made Lost in Translation into being an older man.
Right. Like, it's not that.
Scheming on a younger lady.
No.
And that's not it at all. It's,
no.
It's companionship.
Yep.
And helping each other out and mentoring. Oh, my goodness.
We have nailed this theme to the wall.
He needs to know this if he doesn't. Yeah. Or maybe he doesn't need to know it. Yeah. He just needs to keep on doing his thing.
But I think particularly American audiences were so unused to seeing a man and a woman on screen
right.
being
it's not
friends.
Sexual. Like, get over it, people.
It's not sexual and it's not creepy.
No.
They're just friends.
Yeah. And I still do kind of want to know what he says to her, but I'll get over
it. We all do.
I'll get over it. I'm okay with it.
Let's not know. Let's keep it ambiguous. Yes.
Broken Flowers is a great example of a toned down Bill Murray, but still emotional. Because toned down can be some of the most emotional of the bunch. So I
right.
enjoyed it.
It's probably my favorite Bill Murray film.
Oh.
I love Broken Flowers a lot.
It's great.
I really love it a lot.
And so we love Bill Murray unequivocally, but we admit, of course, that he's had some missteps.
Yes.
Recently, Hyde Park on the Hudson, where he played Franklin Delano Roosevelt, springs to mind. Not very successful.
No, the trailer was horrible. I just couldn't watch anything else.
I sat through it. I regret that time. But it's really not good. Not all because of Bill Murray, though at times he picks up a voice that's like Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
And then sometimes he doesn't.
And then other times he's just clearly not trying.
No. I feel like he wasn't that into it.
No, there's a really awful narrator who is Franklin Delano Roosevelt's fifth cousin and love interest.
Yeah.
That narration is heinous. It's really, really bad. It's not even good for like Hallmark quality. And that's not the best maybe criticism of it, but it just doesn't hold up very well at all.
Yeah. But this was the more recent phase where I feel like he's trying for an Oscar.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
Rock the Casbah, which came out last year, which was also not good.
An attempt to be timely.
Yes.
Right? Because he's going to Afghanistan and trying to offer up some sort of women's liberation for what it can be in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
None of it really works all that well.
And he's a rock and roll music promoter. It doesn't really work. St. Vincent, I think, was the closest to almost being good, but not really.
Yeah. He's, again, mentoring a child
in St. Vincent.
Single parent moves in next door, played by Melissa McCarthy, who's amazing. She's not amazing, but she's really great in it.
Yes.
She's the best part of St. Vincent. That and the closing credits are what I would say are the best the best parts of that film. The rest of it's kind of forgettable and really cliche laden and not something I was all that interested in.
So I feel like now he's not really following the weird Bill Murray muse that had been driving him previously. He's looking for maybe accolades.
Perhaps,
So fingers crossed that he gets back to the funky anything goes. Mm. We don't know what you're going to do next.
Well, the Cubs
Bill Murray.
Won. So
the Cubs won, which
was
yes. That could have re-energized
like maybe
him.
That's a revamp. Let's do it, Bill.
That was one of his best performances of last year when the Cubs won. And you just saw him crying and screaming.
I don't even like the Cubs, and I was like,
I don't even care. It became a Bill Murray story, which was kind of incredible.
Yeah, he's been singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game with him for a while.
Yeah.
That's not something he did just for attention there. That's
no.
Long-time Cubs fan.
He loves it.
Real quickly, a shout-out to the 1999 film Cradle Will Rock, directed by Tim Robbins. Mm. I really, really like that film. It's a little uneven, and maybe it tries to do too much. Bill Murray, though, is in it as a kind of washed-up vaudeville actor, and he's training two new vaudeville actors, one played by Jack Black,
which is
kind of interesting, in an interesting role. But the movie itself is really good. Again, there's an Orson Welles character in it because he's directing a stage presentation of Macbeth, or actually of Cradle Will Rock after his Macbeth production. And so that I always like an Orson Welles character in your movie, and I'll probably like it more.
Yeah.
I'll like it more. I like Ed Wood.
Yes, he's in Ed Wood, yeah.
There's an Orson Welles character there, and Bill Murray. Mm.
And Richard Linklater did an Orson Welles film.
Yeah, Orson Welles and Me. I like that.
Yep.
So, 1999's Cradle Will Rock I really like and recommended, underviewed, underseen, underappreciated film, generally speaking.
I agree. That one is really great. So I think we're getting ready to wrap up here. But this has been a great tour through Murrayland.
Definitely.
I've had a good time.
Oh, well, I've had a great time.
I've learned new things.
We've learned new things.
I'm shocked and appalled, but I'm okay.
We've discovered Heather's love of Ghostbusters 2,
which
her
is
dislike
weird.
Of Andie McDowell. We've discovered
also a little weird
themes of Bill
Who
Murray.
Likes Andie McDowell as an actress? Come on. Let's be real.
There's a topic for future. Yeah. So thank you, Heather and Rusty.
Thanks, Jeff.
So this brings us to rule number 805 of the Many Rules of Film Club, which is, it's not always great to be number two unless you're making a great sequel, in which point it is. So we're going to be talking next time at the Many Rules of Film Club about great sequels. Before we go, I just want to mention you should please check us out on Facebook. You should check us out on iTunes. You can rate us so we can see how we're doing. Let us know. Let us know what's going on.
It does help, too. Ratings help us just get more listeners and get more exposure on iTunes. So please.
That's all we want.
Give us some stars.
Click the stars. Leave a comment.
We want to be exposed to you. Oh, well, that probably came out wrong. But yeah, whatever. Okay. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next time on Many Rules of Film Club.